Hey yo, and here we go. Another episode of We Talk Music is back on the air and in your ear. And once again, I am Mo, joined by the King of the Casters. And sometimes I call this guy the man with the golden voice, but I can't say that today, Brett, because the man actually joining us is a man with a golden voice. Yours, I'm sorry, just pales in comparison. But nevertheless, you are Mr. Brett Podcast. And Brett, it's time for you to tell everybody who we are. We always like to have a little Canadian content. We're not CRTC regulated as a podcast, but it's always good to have a little Canadian content on the show.
Absolutely. And when you can have Canadian content that's as talented as this one, then you go for it. We have Theo Tams. He's a former winner of Canadian Idol. And like you say, he does have the golden voice. Theo, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. I got to get a t-shirt made that says Man with the Golden Voice. That's like some good merch.
Oh, I know.
Brett, you got to trademark that right away,
yeah.
Brett.
Yeah. Right. We'll have to fight for it, but
give him a fee, $15. Front row seats when you come to Calgary.
Yeah, exactly. I'll give you a cut.
Perfect. Yeah, you know what? You'll sell way more than I will, so it's all good.
That's interesting because we are here in Calgary, and you're from small city just outside of Lethbridge. It was Coaldale. Is that what it's called?
Coaldale, yeah, about 15 minutes east of Lethbridge. So, small town, southern Alberta guy.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy because, as you want to explore your dreams and to be a singer, and, I imagine, what age were you first thinking about it? I know you were studying in university when you went on American Idol, weren't you?
Canadian Idol.
I was. You could have won American Idol, I'm going to say it right now. If you wanted to, you just, Canadian Idol, yeah.
Yeah, no, I was in university, but I was training very, very classically. So I was planning on kind of going into the whole opera world. That was the goal. And then that kind of got flipped on its head about my third year in. And there wasn't enough of a creative outlet. It's very mathematical. It's very technically driven, which I'm really thankful to have that training, but there wasn't a creative outlet. I think I've been a writer before I was a singer. So to not be able to have that element, kind of made me want to switch and go into, I guess more of the pop world.
Well, that makes sense though.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, it's, nobody singing opera sings their own stuff, do they?
No, it is very much, like I said, I'm so thankful for the training and I love the art form still to this day, but unless they start, unless there is, some composers nowadays who want to really try to keep the art form alive, I don't know how, it's a sad thing to think about, but I don't know how much longer it'll be around because the new generation coming up, even, my generation, to get them to be excited about, Mozart is a bit of a stretch say the least. So I think, I hope that there's some, creative people who can kind of try to find a way to bring that art form into more of, pop culture, but that's going to be tough to do, I think.
I think it's so much the same when you talk about all these types of music and older music. I mean, like, what does happen to them as we start to progress through, through the years and the generations? I mean, because I know that my son, I don't know what he's going to wind up listening to in 20 years, but it's probably not going to be the same kind of thing that I listened to necessarily when I was, 10 years old or whatever.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, And opera is just it's almost such a niche thing, but at the same time, the talent level is extraordinary.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's kind of, it's one of the cool things about music, especially these days, just how fast, the industry is changing and how production is playing such a huge part now, so much more than it ever has. I think that genres are crossing so quickly. I mean, like you're having, that perfect example is like the Old Town Road song, which is, this huge rap song that was number one on the country charts, So mm-hmm. this genre blending is really cool to see. And I think that, you know, yeah, just like I said, with production playing such a huge role, I think that we're going to continue to see more of that. So I don't know if there'll be as a definitive of a sound for our time. You know, when you think about it, you know, the 80s had such a cool sound and the 70s had such a cool sound. And I don't know what the 2020 sound is going to be.
It's interesting because we had on, you know, we have on people from all sorts of different generations, and we had Sandy Horn from Spoons on, and you know, this new wave, you know, Canadian new wave classic, you know, icons really. And we were talking to her about the experimentation that was allowed in the music then, in the forum then. And it seems to me like in order to find an audience now, the experimentation is not always as accepted.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm interested in talking then about your songwriting process, because when you know, as you've gone through, you talk about these other musical forms and stuff like that. And I know that for you, it's a very personal thing. I mean, I think it is for a lot of people, but like maybe kind of break down how that process works for you.
I think it's really been something that I've tried to, you know, I think as any creative person, I think you really try to hone your craft and hone your ability. And for me, the older that I've gotten, it's kind of just been about saying yes more. There was so many times, you know, growing up, especially in my early 20s, when, you know, I'd be in the studio writing, and I know now that it was very much just censoring, kind of that inner voice, you know, not wanting to write about certain things, not wanting to write about, you know, my faith growing up, and not wanting to write about, you know, my sexuality necessarily, because those things often would butt heads. So I think, you know, the last 4 or 5 years especially, it's just been about being willing to maybe go to those sometimes uncomfortable places. And I find that that's where I've kind of been able to find myself most authentically as a writer. And I think that those are the songs that are connecting the most with my audience, which has been, you know, wonderfully reassuring to just kind of trust your instincts and be able to take those risks and, you know, find strength in the vulnerability.
Yeah, that brings us to your latest song, the last song.
Yeah.
You know, and we're going to talk to you about the video, but the song itself, how long were you writing this song for?
Oh, dear Lord, that song. The song itself was written very, very quickly, actually. It's probably one of the fastest songs I wrote. I think it was written and recorded with the vocal that we used. It was very, very close to a one take vocal. It might have been two or three takes. And there still is some spots when I listen to it back where I hear, you know, kind of the flaws. But I think that that's kind of, it just added so much emotion to the vocal. So overall, the process of writing and recording the actual song was very, very fast. But I've attempted to write that song for probably the better part of a decade.
Wow.
and it never happened. And I don't know what was different about this session. I don't know if finally it just felt right and ready to kind of be able to go there. But it was, it was definitely the better part of probably 10 or 11 years to find the right words and the right melody to tell that story.
Did you produce it yourself and mix it and that type of thing? Or was there other people involved in helping you?
Yeah, no, I worked with my producer, Ari Rhodes. He actually produced a couple of the tracks on Call the Doctor, the record from 2018. So yeah, he was definitely had a hand in producing the demo. And then Gauthier Marinoff, who produced the record, ended up producing the final track. But I think what was so awesome about that song and that process is that we originally had only planned to do 6 songs on the EP. And I had my whole team together at Slate Music, and we were listening to everything. And we probably had about 30 or 40 songs. We were trying to narrow it down to 6. And we had chosen our 6, and everyone was, you know, feeling jazzed about it. We were all super stoked. And then while I had everyone in the room in the studio, and there was about 5 of us, I said, you know what, I just want to show you one more. I just have a voice note of it. Ari and I just kind of finished writing it a couple days ago. So I played them just a voice note of the demo of the last song. And sometimes when you have the whole team together, you get about 30 seconds in or a minute in, and everyone's already decided, you know, this is great or this isn't great. And the last song is about a 4-minute song, and everyone was silent for those 4 minutes. And then when the song ended, no one said anything. And I just remember being like, I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing. And it was just this really awkward silence. And all of a sudden, Derek Ross, the president of Slate Music, he stood up and he's just like, well, I guess we're doing 7 songs now. And it was just a really, really cool moment that, you know, something that was so personal to me just resonated with all of them differently. And I think that's when I knew that there was something really, really special about that track in particular.
Well, there's no question. I mean, fantastic song. Yeah.
And that does bring us to the video now, because it manages to be both simple and high concept at the same time. I rather than having me explain it, why don't you explain the video for people, and I hope they go check it out, and kind of the genesis of it all.
Right. Well, I mean, I knew as soon as the song was released on the album, that was the song that I really started to get feedback from, you know, almost immediately. The record came out in at the end of September, and it was, I think, that night or maybe the next morning, I just started getting messages on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter of people referencing that song and how much, you know, it meant to them and how much it was helping them, and in ways that I never expected. You know, for me, that song was written about just a really sorry excuse for a relationship that was, you know, super manipulative. And then I'm hearing from people that it helped them kind of get over, you know, abandonment issues from their parents or, you know, a teacher that was really, you know, crappy to them. So it kind of started taking off in avenues that I never expected. So when it came to the video, I knew that I wanted to make a visual of some kind that really tried to depict, not only for me, but from the messages that I was receiving from people, just about how I think we all have that one relationship where we feel, you know, that we're never going to be enough and we're never going to measure up no matter what we try. And, you know, we can try everything. And it's just about, you know, you just know that it's not going to be enough. So to capture that visually, I think that's when I decided that, and I've always kind of, just going into the visual of it, I've always kind of had, I always have scruff. Like, I've never had a huge beard. I always have scruff. And in my head, I was just like, okay, if we're going to do this, and this was about, we shot the video just this past February, and this was a Christmas, I guess, of 2018, it would have been. And that's the last time that I touched my beard. So I literally grew out the beard for about 14 months, just so that I'd have more to play with. And then leading up to the shoot, about 3 months before, I didn't cut my hair. So I just remember showing up to the video and the hair and makeup guy. So I had a barber and then I had a makeup person as well. And I just remember walking in and then being like, damn, like we gotta clean this up because it was just a mess. But I knew, especially, that I wanted some shock value, too. So to be able to go from kind of this mop top hair and the huge beard, very much just raw and natural and who I was in the moment, to going completely clean shaven with pretty much a brush cut, to show just that vulnerability and just all these different characters. You know, for me, I really referenced some of the things that, you know, I was told in that relationship, you know, like, Theo, why can't you just be more chill? And that's what kind of where that like hippie stoner character came from. And, you know, why can't you be more confident, or why can't you toughen up? So a lot of these characters kind of came from, you know, those very real life, you know, words and thoughts that, you know, were kind of, I experienced through that relationship. And that's where I think that visual came from, was really wanting to pull from those moments and try to give them all their own face and their own time and their own their own quality on camera.
So how many different actual outfit and makeup changes did you have?
I think we ended up doing close to 20. And then I think we ended up choosing, 13 or 14. Some were because we couldn't get, there was one where we couldn't get the logo cleared. So weren't allowed to use that one. And then some we thought were going to be really effective on camera. And then when we got the first edit of the video back, I just kind of realized that they weren't really adding as much as I thought they would. So we ended up cutting them and just kind of sticking with the ones that were really going to be able to push the story forward.
How long was the shoot?
The shoot was probably about 15 hours. I think we started around 8 o'clock in the morning. And we think we got out around midnight or so.
Wow.
So as you're going through all these and doing all these changes, outfit changes, and you go and perform, two questions. First off, how do you perform the entire song and then choose it? Or is there, do you know what section you're going to perform?
No, we did. I think just for, if maybe I had planned better, I think we could have, you know, separated it into sections, but I really wanted to, the point I think of getting that real emotion, especially in the bridge and near the end of the song, I think if we were to just hop right into those sections, we would lose a bit of that buildup. So we did two passes of each look, one close up and one wide shot. And I think the only look that we didn't do a full pass was the very, very last, the very, very last shot of the video, because I knew that the only time that I wanted to see that character, which kind of represents finally moving on and letting go, was at the very, very end. So I think we just shot the last chorus for that look, but all the other ones were full passes.
Wow. See, that's interesting to me, because as what makes the video work, it's not, I mean, the outfit changes, different characters, these things are definitely going to, they're definitely going to grab people's attention. But what makes it work is the performance that you give, you know, and the emotion in your face. So how difficult is it to recreate that kind of emotion for that many hours, that many times?
For me, it was definitely trying to just kind of put myself into what that character was going to be feeling. So, and I think that's why we ended up using a lot more of certain ones than others. We ended up using a lot of that kind of hippie look just because my attitude with that character was very kind of separated from the emotion. Whereas some of the more vulnerable ones were so intense that we kind of needed a couple others that, while the song is still intense, still added a bit of emotional disconnect. Otherwise, it would just be me sobbing for like 4 minutes straight. I think it was just about kind of trying to tap into each character and what they would be feeling in that moment and what they would be saying to that individual. Some were definitely a lot harder than others. I mean, like the very vulnerable, like black eye kind of bruised look, that one was really, really hard. And I just remember the videographer and the editor were there, and the editor was saying, you know, obviously you just kind of gotta feel it. And I'm not going to tell you, you know, when I kind of want that teardrop moment, but if you can try to save it for closer to the end of the video, then I think it's just going to be more impactful. And I was just like, yeah, sure, I'm on it. And then about 20 seconds in, I was already just choking up. So that one was very, very difficult. The drag look, as fabulous as it was also terrifying. Like that one was, that's just so not me. And it's so not, I love the art form of drag. It's not one that I could ever pull off. So I felt probably the most uncomfortable in that look as well. That one was really difficult. If I would ever do drag, then I'm going to be singing like Tina Turner or some shit, you know, like I would not be singing that song. So
yeah,
that one too was a tough one.
Ekis Drag is so over the top, and I mean, a wonderful, wonderful art form. Just, I mean, the work that they put in, fantastic. But yeah, I mean, the last song is so not over the top, and then, this drag art form is so over the top. So yeah, they don't
Right.
necessarily mesh in that regard for sure.
I
But
know. Well, that was, it's funny because it was actually my partner who suggested the drag look, and I initially shut it down. I was like, not a chance. And he just said, he's like, just think about it, because he's like, the way that I see the video and the way that you're explaining your concept to me, you're gonna want kind of that, that WTF moment where your audience really pulls back and it's just like, holy shit. So I think that I didn't want to do it, but then when I saw it and saw how it was used, I was super stoked that we went there for sure. And if I have to shave my beard off, I might as well do drag. So
Oh yeah, no doubt. I mean,
well, that does bring us to the biggest question as we record this in late April 2020, currently as we're talking to you, beard or no beard?
Oh, it is fully back, especially with this quarantine. Like usually I would like at least give it a bit of like a trim or a bit of a shape every few days, and I'm just letting the beast grow. So it is fully back and it's large and in charge.
That's
Nice.
the only way to go right now. It's like everybody's gonna have like some sort of COVID beard action going on
Yes,
afterwards.
exactly. Large and in Exactly.
charge. I'm doing that, but not with my beard, but with my belly. So
Yeah, you're
Oh, I'm
working
here for that too.
that
Believe me, I'm here for
Well, yeah, because
that.
I noticed that especially on your Facebook and stuff like that, you're posting a lot of the photos of your food, and I mean, you look like a wonderful cook, so.
Honestly, I'm the kind of person in regular life, I'm very rarely home. I'm always out. I'm either in the studio recording, or I'm teaching, or I'm out with my partner and our daughter, or I'm out with friends. So home is just not a place that I spend a lot of time. So being forced here and, kind of forced to stay home has presented a lot of challenges. And the kitchen for me is just a place ever since I was a kid, with my oma and my grandma and my mom. The kitchen was just always a place that felt, really safe, and it totally just calms my nerves and helps with anxiety. So I've been spending a lot of time in the kitchen. I got like every single thing that you can imagine making. I got kombucha brewing, I got sauerkraut going, I got it all. Like this place has become like a fermentation station, I swear.
Well, now I want to come over. I know I can't, but it's just like, but I'm like, ooh, kombucha and sauerkraut.
Yeah,
Fantastic.
exactly. I'll send you a jar.
Oh, excellent. That works for me.
You'll
Yeah, I
take
mean,
it too.
yeah. But I mean, you talk about some of those challenges, and I mean, and I guess for a person who has spent so much time away, that even just like the interpersonal connections with your partner and such must probably be a little bit different, overall.
100%. I mean, we've been together for almost 9 years. So we definitely have, a really, really strong foundation. But I mean, we live in a two-bedroom apartment kind of on the east side of Toronto. And I don't think anywhere is fun to be during this quarantine, but Toronto's really not fun during this quarantine. Like, it's a really tough city to begin with, never mind with all of this going on. And I think, part of the reason that you live in a big city is to take advantage of what it has to offer, like, all the parks and the restaurants and the clubs. And so to be able to just not be able to do any of that. And we have a 7-month-old Great Dane puppy right now as well. Like, it was just like a pony. And not to be able to take him to the dog parks or to the beaches. And so, yeah, it's been difficult. But I mean, I think at the end of the day, what's more difficult is participating in anything that would prolong this. So I think it sucks, but it's kind of, we're all in this together and we all got to do our part. So
Well, and it gives us the chance to talk to you, which is always good. We there's lots of
yes,
interviews to be
exactly.
had, so why not sit down and do them?
Exactly.
I mentioned to my sister that you were coming on. Tina, she's a big fan. You know, she flipped out. She said, "You're her all-time favorite Canadian Idol performer." She referenced the Serena Ryder song you did. She said she thinks she loves Serena Ryder, and she said she thinks it's better than the original. And and quote, "I friggin' love him." Was what she said. So for my sister, for Tina.
Yes, for Tina. I love you, Tina.
Do you have any memories of that particular performance? And what do you rank as your best performances while on the show?
I do remember almost every song very, very vividly. Weak in the Knees for me was, I can't remember what, it wasn't the Canadian theme. It was, I think, Acoustic Night.
It was the acoustic, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And for me, that was one of my favorites because it's the first time that I got to play with live strings on the show. The cello is one of my favorite instruments. So, and I remember the cello player was just lovely, and the tone that she was getting out of that instrument was incredible. So, one thing about my performance of Weak in the Knees on that show that a lot of people didn't pick up on is that I completely screwed up the lyrics. Like I think I sing the first verse twice, or I sing the first verse with a line from the second verse, or I just completely did it wrong. And you can actually, if you know me at all, you can see it in my eyes that I'm like, oh shit. Like I totally, live TV, sang this song wrong. She's one of my favorite Canadian artists and I just butchered it. And I just remember being like, you gotta sell the shit out of this chorus then, because otherwise you're going home.
Well, I guess it worked.
Yeah, well, apparently so.
So what do you rank as your best performances? Is that up? I'm guessing that one's up there then?
It's definitely up there. I think my favorite was, I would say, oh gosh. I mean, every single performance was so, you know, special to me in one way or another. But I think the ultimate for me was the finale when I sang Good Mother. Just because I'm from Southern Alberta. I've been a diehard Jan Arden fan since I could learn to sing. Her songs have always spoken to me, and they've always, you know, just ranked so highly in my favorite songs. And so for me, and to end, I knew that was going to be the last song that I sang on that show, and to end it with, you know, my parents in the audience. And my parents and I have had, you know, a very roller coaster relationship. I grew up in a really, really strict reformed Christian household, and then it kind of came out right before the show, and then ended up coming out on live TV to a country. So for them, it was this, you know, crazy experience. And, you know, as it was for me, for different reasons, but to have them in the audience on finale and to be able to sing that song and just kind of, you know, put our differences aside and celebrate this this moment was super, super special. So I think for me, that was a chance also to kind of just sit at the piano, play with no band, and just, you know, there's a lyric in that song that says, face forward, be yourself. And for me, that's just exactly what that moment stood for. So I think that would probably be my favorite.
The show also features mentors, obviously, and you had some incredible, like, you look at that, the people that were your mentor, people, Brian Adams and Anne Murray and John Legend on that last song. Did any of them leave you with something, some piece of advice or something they taught you that stuck more than others?
For me, my favorite was Brian Adams. He's also someone that, you know, I've always looked up to, not only as a singer and as a performer, but as a songwriter. And what was so cool about him is that there were some mentors that we worked with that as soon as the director called cut, they'd kind of shut off and they'd go back to their dressing room and whatever. And Brian Adams was just not like that. You know, when I think that we got the most out of him when the cameras weren't rolling and we could just kind of, you know, talk the talk and get to know each other. But I remember he said that we had no idea what we were in for when it came to making a go in this industry. And he said, just continue to work on your craft and learn to be inspired when you're uninspired. And I will never forget that, because that's something that I think as a creative people, we often take for granted. And I think, you know, we don't always feel inspired to write or to sing or to perform. And that's where this becomes the job, you know, and you have to, you know, just put your feet on the ground. And whether you feel inspired or not, you still have to be productive and you still have to show up and you still have to go to work. So for me, that's something that I'll never forget and I'll take away 100%.
Yeah, that's really cool. I think a lot of people, you know, have the perception that if you're an Idol winner, you're golden for the rest of your life. You know, but truthfully, it's a launching point. It's a platform. It's nice to have, but it's not going to give you anything forever.
It's interesting because it has proven to be, I think I was one of the lucky ones. I was a little bit older when I was on the show. I was 23. I was on the last season. So I had kind of had 5 years of seeing what happened with the winners, you know, and what kind of, so my expectations were not super, super high. I just wanted to get, number one, I wanted to get out of Coaldale, Alberta. As much as I love that town and I still love going home, I wanted to get out and I wanted to get my foot in the door of this industry. And that's literally all my goal was to hopefully build enough contacts in the year or two after the show that I could find a way to sustain myself in the city by being a working musician. So definitely I think that my expectations were maybe a little bit more realistic.
That's really interesting because I don't know as fans and stuff like that, I don't know that you think about these realistic expectations, but I mean, it is so important to have them because the thought wow, you're going to be huge.
Right. I mean, and that's what's crazy about that show. I mean, the spectacle of it is massive. You know, even when I, you know, catch clips of it, and I watch it back, or like, you know, every September comes around and I rewatch the winning moment. It's insane to me because I watch that winning moment and I'm like, oh my God, that's so crazy. I'm so happy for him. And then I'm like, dude, that's you. But it's nuts. Like it's crazy because the visual of it and the spectacle of it is massive. And they put on such a great production. But once that confetti is swept up, you are on your own in an industry full of sharks. So you got to learn to swim quick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fascinating to hear you talk about that and how it's almost like it is an experience that happened to somebody totally different. And I suppose to a large degree, given how much you've changed, how much you know, like moving away from the label that you were on and going to work kind of more for yourself, you probably have changed a lot. You are a different person.
Oh gosh. I mean, it's interesting because there is obviously still elements of me that is that 23-year-old kid. But so much has changed. Not only, you know, in my life, my personal life, but in the industry and as for myself as an artist, so much has changed. And I think that's exciting and it's nostalgic to look back, but I think that the more time you spend looking back, the less time you are looking forward. And so that's kind of the goal for me now is to just continue to really push myself creatively and artistically and to just kind of ride the waves of this industry. I remember being at the Junos in 2010, and I had a conversation with Sarah Sleen, who I also just adore. And she said something to me that also just really resonated. And she said, the music industry is like being a cork in the ocean. And it's your job as an artist to trust the fact that when a big wave comes and you get pushed under, you have to trust yourself and you have to trust your talent that you're going to pop up to the surface again. And for me, these things, I'm just like, these are artists that I also thought were just like living the dream and living large. And for them to be telling me these things, I was just like, this is going to be a ride. So, and it has been, it's been a wonderful, terrifying, heartbreakingly awesome ride.
You know, the thing that I take from this though, is that you sound like you're not only prepared for it, but I mean, you know, mentally and emotionally, I think that you do have a good head on your shoulders to be able to kind of go for that ride.
I think I do now.
Right.
I don't think I did back then. It's, I mean, I think it just takes some growing up, and I think it takes surrounding yourself with the right people and developing, you know, the right support network, which for me, moving from Coaldale, Alberta to Toronto, and finding, you know, a support network that I could really trust and rely on, that took years to build. So I think once you have all those things in place, then you just start taking the pressure and the weight off of being an artist, and you just simply create because it's your purpose to create. And I think once you can do that, I think that's where the magic really, really starts to come. You know, the last song video is a perfect example of that, where I kind of went in with this concept to my team at Slate Music, and they said, okay, cool, here's your budget. And I said, okay, I've locked in this person for editing, this person for shooting, this person for makeup, this person for hair, and we're going to be shooting on this date. And they're like, cool, we'll see you then. And I was like, no, like, you guys can just chill and I'll send you the video when it's done, you know? And I think that's super rare, because they trusted me enough to execute the vision that I had in my head. And it was nice to kind of be able to do that. And for me, a very important part of it was to do it by myself, in that sense of just really bringing that vision to life. I mean, I don't know if I had team members there, if it would have been better or worse, but at least this way I know that I can safely say that, you know, the video that we brought forth is exactly what I wanted to do. And I think that in this industry, that's becoming more and more and more rare, to not ever have to find at least one thing to compromise on. And for this video, that was just not even an option for me. I was absolutely not going to compromise on one thing.
Well, I'm glad you didn't, because I mean, it's an amazing video. It's definitely, it stands out. And so that's really important.
Thank you.
Now, you don't happen to be sitting next to a piano, do you?
No, I don't.
Oh, that's too bad. Would have loved to have had a performance, but...
Of what?
Oh, of anything. Whatever you'd like.
Okay, one second. I gotta move.
Okay, that's fine. You can move.
Oh, this is gonna be great.
Can I sing a cover? Is that allowed?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, cool. One second. I don't know if my microphone will pick this up, but we'll give it a whirl.
We'll give it a whirl.
Okay. We're going to do like a, we'll do like a full circle moment here.
Ooh, nice.
And we'll come right back to some Jan Arden. Nice. You guys are in Calgary, so I feel it's only fitting, yeah?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Perfect.
Okay, here we go.
Well, I've got money in my pocket, and I like the color of my hair. And I've got a friend who loves me, got a house, and I've got a car, and I've got a good mother, and voices what keeps me here, feet on ground, heart in hand, facing forward, be yourself. And I have never wanted anything. No, I have never wanted anything so bad. Mm-hmm. people I've been thrown out with all the rusted, tangled, dented, goddamn misery. You could say that I'm hard to hold, but if you knew me, you'd know that I'm a good father. And strength is what makes me cry. And I never wanted anything. I never wanted anything so bad.
There you go.
Oof. Oh, unbelievable.
Fantastic.
Was marvelous. Oh.
That's a first for me, gentlemen. I've never sang on a podcast before. So
well,
that
we,
was absolutely spectacular.
We appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you so that much for doing that.
That was
thank
incredible.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's been awesome.
Well, yeah.
This is, yeah. So where can everybody keep up with you then?
Exactly.
Theo?
Hit me up on Instagram and Facebook. I'm active on both. So, yeah, find me on the interwebs.
The interwebs. Oh, yes. Well, I urge everybody to go and listen, and especially to view the last song, the video. It's wonderful stuff. I mean, Theo, you're an amazing guest, and I know we wish you nothing but the best in the future, and certainly look forward to hopefully getting a chance to see you live at some point when you come back to Alberta. And an honestly wonderful performance, so thank you so much for coming on.
Cheers. Thank you so much. Stay safe, guys.
Will do. You too. Bye now.
Cheers.
I hung on every word you said, every nuance hung there like a thread. I took in every breath you breathed, every exhale took it like a man. But when push comes to shove, I just pushed. And when all was said and done, you were done long before you left. This is the last song I will write about you. This is your last song. This is the last. This is the last song I will sing for you. This is your last song. This is the last. We walked our love on a flat line, always concerned about your heart, never too concerned with mine. And you raised the white flag, and I saw the sign so brightly lit, but chose to be blind. But when push comes to shove, I just pushed. And when all was said and done, you were done long before you left. This is the last song I will write about you. This is your last song. This is the last. This is the last song I will sing for you. This is your last song. This is the last. I hope you hear it every morning and before you go to sleep. I hope you hear it on the radio.
it's your last song. This is the last song I will write about you. This is your last song. This is the last. This is the last song I will sing for you. This is the last song. This has to be the last. This has to be the last.